afraid.
Good morning and welcome to the roundtable. We're ready to go if you're not. Hey, it's Monday, the 5th of December. Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and welcome to our panel. Let me introduce the group to you and let you know what's happening today. First and foremost, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
I certainly don't think foremost. However,
well, I was going to say
we don't either.
The reason I say foremost is for the obvious reason, but also because I wanted you to sort of give us, for people who can hear us, and maybe for people who can't, give a report.
Thanks,
as to
Joe.
What's going on.
Thanks, Joe. I was going to do exactly that, and we've worked together too long. So the answer to this is...
As long as you don't finish each other's sentences.
National Grid is... we do that. National Grid has... we know that we are off the air. We are out of power up on the hill, Mount Greylock.
We ran out.
Yes, and the generator, which is not owned by us, but is owned by Channel 10, which is the owner of the tower, did not kick in for us. So that is our problem right now. We've been up all night long talking to Stacey Perry Rosenberry, our chief engineer, and Pat Cooney and everybody else have been leaning on National Grid to figure out what's going on. And they are doing, right now, they are telling us that they're sending crews up there and they're getting it done. We were told we would be back on the air by 10 o'clock last night. We obviously weren't. Now, this has to do with something called phase 1, 2, and 3. If you live in a house, you have an electric wire coming in, power wire coming in, that is, you're a one-phase person. Most of us are. Down here we are. But because we need so much energy up there on top of the hill, we have three phases coming in. One phase seems to be operating, not the other two. And that is why so many people cannot hear WAMC this morning. I should say, here's what you do. If you do what I did this morning, you listen on 105.1 coming out of the Berkshires all the way, literally all the way to into Albany. It was fine.
Right. We should note that it's only 90.3.
Yes, right, Joe.
So
exactly.
1,400 and all the others, those are all okay.
If you live in Albany,
90.3.
You live in Albany, 1,400, which is an AM station.
Right.
If you live in Kingston or the Mid-Hudson Valley, 90.3 and so on and so forth in terms of 90.9. I'm so sorry. So 90.9 down there. And it should all work for you. Or, of course, you can listen in your on your device. Now, your cell phone, for example. So those are some of the things you can
just
do.
Just
right.
the app.
Right. Yeah.
We put it out on our social media, so people should know. I have to say, though, for all of us who just walked in the building the last half hour or so, all you can hear is just the phone ringing off the hook. It sounds it sounds like a fun drive when you walk in because the front office is just like, why can't I hear my radio station? So
Well, that's really nice. It's great. It shows how much people want to listen.
Yes.
And they're upset that they can't.
Yeah.
Well, no, and people, by the way, nobody that I talked to, and I talked to a lot of people this morning, nobody I talked to was angry.
Oh, no, they understand. Mm. No, they understand. They're just worried. So, they think that...
Trump shut us down.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't going to say that, Rosemary, but that's... Thank you. That's what I was
thinking.
That's
my role.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what has happened over the weekend.
Wait. That was me.
Oh,
what
yes.
about Rosemary?
Well, Rosemary Armeo. I'm sorry. We got... that's right. We have what did you call
Intros.
the three sources of
the
power?
The three phases.
So, Alan, phase one. Phase two, Rosemary Armeo, the director of the journalism program at at SUNY Albany, or University at Albany, so I don't get in trouble. Yeah. Good morning.
Hello.
And Libby Post, our political consultant and our dear friend, and thank you very much for being with us.
Well, it's lovely to be here.
All right. So let us go with what has happened. It's been a very busy news weekend, and there was a lot to talk about and a lot to catch up with. Let's give them the meat. So let's talk first about the Dakota Pipeline. This is the big story that people have been saying that... the coverage of this has been scarce, even though we've been covering it a lot. But,
flies on flypaper.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe won a major victory on Sunday in its battle to block an oil pipeline being built near its reservation when the Department of Army announced that it would not allow the pipeline to be drilled under a dammed section of the Missouri River. The Army said it would look for alternate routes or alternative routes for the $3.7 billion Dakota Access Pipeline. Construction of the route a half mile from the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation has become a global flashpoint for environmental and indigenous activism, drawing thousands of people out to a sprawling prairie camp of tents, teepees, and yurts.
Including 1,000 veterans, I mean.
Yes, yes, which is great.
So, Rosemary, I'm going to start with you because you have been talking about, well, you were talking about that we had to do something. It was getting cold. There were, you know, the weather was moving in and there were deadlines here and something had to happen.
Yeah, I would love to be optimistic. And certainly people felt that way when they got the news. I was cheering. People were thinking, wow, we really did it. We made our point. I fear, however, that it's a temporary thing. What has happened is that the Army Corps of Engineers is refusing to give the easement for the pipeline over the land. It owns and will call for an environmental review, which could, of course, take years. However, on January 20th, everything changes. Donald Trump has said he owns stock, of course, in DAPL, and he has said that doesn't matter. That doesn't really affect his opinion. But he really thinks this is a good idea and we should go through with it. So I don't see anything in this order. I read and read and read to try to find it, and many of the people out in Dakota have done the same, and there is nothing in there to stop him from simply reversing this. So I think you may have had a stay for
47 days.
Weeks, yeah, until the inauguration.
Is part of the alternative to keep it just out of the?
They could do
that
go around
to go around, right?
Right,
and but obviously
could have
that's
done
at
that
a cost,
long
right?
Ago
right,
and the
right.
people
now.
Who own the pipeline don't want to do that.
Right.
It'll cost them more money, and clearly Trump doesn't want to do that. So that was my take on it as well. It's like, this is lovely. But nothing stays real.
Many friends that I'm talking to and listeners who have been sending stuff in to us who have people out there are all saying no one really wants to leave. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we're much further ahead than we were. Obama did what he could, but it isn't permanent.
Right.
It's not going to turn things around.
You know, I'll point this to you most, Libby, because of your history of activism, but you know, you're never you know, you take your victories where you can get them.
Yes, but you also want the long term, and so, you know, the New York Times article, everyone was celebrating this. You know, but it really has to do with whether or not in 47 days or whatever it is when Trump gets elected, whether he will reverse that or if he's going to listen to the Army Corps of Engineers. And, you know, whether this is going to be at the top of his list, it's, you know, this gives the folks at Standing Rock and those across the country who are concerned with this something to stand on, to move forward, to voice their opposition. The government has said they're putting a stop to it, at least temporarily, and so that will help. But, you know, look who we've got coming in to the environmental department, somebody who doesn't believe in climate change. I mean, we've got people who are being nominated for various places that don't care about what people have to say. It's
don't
all about
like
their
regulation.
Money.
This is
right.
all
don't
about
like
regulation.
That's right.
This is the sort of thing that holds up business,
right.
keeps that pipeline, which should be in there already. It's keeping it done. This is the epitome of what they don't want.
Right. And so when you have a leak and you poison everybody's wells, oh well, will be the response.
Alan,
I'm multitasking, so you'll have to forgive me if you said something that I'm about to say, but the history of this country in terms of Native Americans has been terrible.
Yeah, right.
And this has more to do with that than anything else. It's just one more insult to what this country has done to its Native American population. We don't give a damn is what is being said to these tribes and to the Sioux in this case. You know, it just is enough to make you hold your head. You know, we criticize other countries who do terrible things to parts of their population, and yet as a country, we do not acknowledge what we've done.
Yeah, it's true, and this is just an extension of that. There's no respect.
It's indigenous people, and it's also environmental. I those who listen to the show all the time know I can't pronounce anything, including my kids' names most days. But they have a war cry that the protesters have been using, and it's water is life. And what's happening in this battle over that pipeline is being replicated around the world, too. Water is becoming mm-hmm. one of those scarce commodities, Alan, that you're always writing about.
It is.
You're always talking about.
It is indeed.
National Grid is on the site, and they're still troubleshooting, so we hopefully will have some answers.
We did hear from one person who wrote to us and said they were in Utica, New York. And they were listening on 90.3.
And it's out of Remsen.
Out of Remsen.
Not ours, but out of Remsen.
Ah, that makes
sense.
Yeah,
so we got a couple of people calling. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so why don't we... all right, I'm not going to take a break because the control room's not ready, but that's okay. So we have the Dakota Pipeline. The other news this morning, the big news this morning, is that Donald Trump has named Ben Carson, or will name Ben Carson, to... Why are you giggling? Stop that.
Because it'll be a really slow...
Ben Carson is named to the Secretary of Housing. The president-elect reached out to a Republican primary rival to lead the Department of Housing and Urban Development. This was, if you remember, that... He was up for several jobs. Ben Carson was at the top of the list at the beginning of this process. He said, I don't feel that I'm really qualified for any of these positions, so I'm going to bow out. They came back and said, we feel this is why we want you to be our HUD secretary. He said that's on the table, and he accepted.
You may remember that. Apropos of nothing, as my father used to say.
I think my father said that too.
that of course Andrew Cuomo was the mm-hmm. was the HUD,
former Bill Clinton. Yes.
Andrew Cuomo has had some good news this morning from the Siena poll, which said that half the people want him to run for president, mm-hmm. the other half do not want him to run for president. And then
these are half the people. This is a New York-based poll that we're talking about.
Yes.
Maybe
Democrats.
And then
are there cynical ways to take that poll?
Well, it's a glass half full, glass half empty.
Wait, is it only Democrats that they polled?
No. Oh no.
Okay,
no,
so it's Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, but I think that the half who want them to run are basically Democrats.
Right.
And the other guys are Republicans. The other thing that is interesting, about that poll is that he's more popular than ever. And that is with all of the stuff that he's been going through with his best friends being indicted and all the rest of it. His popularity still grows. I have always felt, by the way, this is still a tremendous testimonial to the Cuomo name and to Papa Cuomo.
Okay, so I just want to...
Wait, Ben Carson?
I want to get back to Ben Carson. Yeah. So the question is this man, is he qualified, and does he have enough experience? Critics worry over Carson's lack of experience, and...
Well, this is the most inexperienced cabinet ever. So, I mean, you have a president who's totally... A president-elect who has absolutely no experience... Putting Ben Carson in charge of people's housing, poor people's housing, people who he thinks should just bootstrap it and don't deserve any help. I mean,
he made it clear
it's going to be a nightmare.
That the Carson appointment, when he did it, was to show that this was a opportunity, equal opportunity for everyone, which is not so,
lovely. Ben Carson's one of the whitest black people on the planet.
Well. It's hard to say things like that. I don't know.
I'm far more concerned about. It is odd that he's a misfit on there. He's neither a general nor a billionaire, so he is a misfit on this bizarre cabinet that we're getting. He's completely unqualified in any way, but that so is the president. So you know this is what you get. I keep repeating when you vote to shake up the system.
Right.
This is what change looks like. It should be very interesting. If nothing else, there'll be no Satan worship in any public housing project in America.
Nor any pot or anything else.
Any pot. We had a story a few days ago. I don't think we actually discussed it on the
about the public housing, no smoking in public housing, federal housing project.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no.
Now, how
which
are you going to enforce that?
Oh my God, it's so scary. I mean, I really don't think that you should smoke in your house, especially if you have little kids. However, how do you enforce that? So we have police coming in. There's a regulation. There's a regulation that ought to be done away with. Are you listening, Commissioner?
Yeah, except that they'll do everything in their power to make the lives of poor and marginal people even worse.
So real,
and this appointment of Ben Carson is a fallacy, because he's like, see, I have a black person in the cabinet. I'm really not that bad. Yet Carson knows nothing about housing, and the people that they will put in place to bolster Carson, you know, all the
underlings
will do everything in their power to hurt the people they're supposed to help.
Big city mayors and housing experts are nervous about the idea of a billionaire real estate developer in the White House. Now, President-elect Donald Trump has picked Ben Carson, a retired neurosurgeon with no housing experience, as his nominee for Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, and high anxiety has set in. So for cities like Baltimore, Cleveland, Philadelphia, very nervous.
As well they ought to be.
Yeah, right. I mean, they really need to
It'll
be.
Shake
you
up
know,
things.
You know, it doesn't really matter who they put in. As Libby just said... It's the
underlings.
It's the underlings.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's all, I mean, this really is a way for Trump to say, look, I'm not a racist.
Well, he has an Asian on his
Well,
his
there you go. There
too.
You go.
He's
I know, Mitch
racist.
McConnell's wife, and Mitch McConnell's not going to recuse himself
but who's
from voting
the
on
underlings?
Her.
Underlings?
What is
they do.
Oh, no, they pick the underlings.
They pick all
who? Who's they?
The administration, the
right.
White House.
Well, that's what I mean. But the same people who picked Ben Carson is my point. Like,
well, they picked
I want to have the faith that you have, but I don't know that I have
well,
that.
Well, no, but they picked Ben Carson for a reason. As Libby just said, they want a black face in the cabinet, and I don't blame them.
Well, okay, but that doesn't explain all of the other faces that are in there that are equally unqualified.
Well, when you're around New York as long as I have been, and that's a long, long time, you see what happens as governors have come on, Pataki and Cuomo and the other guys. They pick the underlings.
It's patronage.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. And we'll take your letters at panel at WAMC.org. What we'll do with them, we won't tell you until we actually do it. But we'll let you know.
And remember, that's Panel.
Yes, P-A-N-E-L.
Right, we're French now.
We're not a nation of spellers.
P-A-N-E-L.
Including me.
At roundtable.org. In a moment, we want to talk about the Taiwan phone call. But before we do that, we'll go to some letters.
Okay. John says, I give credit to WAMC for covering the events at Standing Rock. You're probably one of the few mainstream news sources in the U.S. doing so. However, there's always a however. However, the CBC has been covering it far better. The Canadians have been paying much closer attention to Standing Rock. All right. Stephanie says, why not build a railroad to transport... the oil in tanker cars, and then be able to use the rails multi-purposely. A pipeline makes no good sense. Thank you, Stephanie in Ackard, New York. Who wants to handle that one? I mean, we do know. Yes, go ahead, Libby.
Oh, well, I was saying no, but I mean, it's even more dangerous to have oil tankers above ground because of
bomb trains.
They're bomb trains. Yeah. We have it here in Albany. We have these oil trains coming through Albany. It's environmental racism. They're like feet away from public housing.
Yeah.
And it is a real danger to all of us. And we had one of those trains blew up in Canada, I think in Montreal or Quebec, and it was horrible.
In any case, thank you, Stephanie, in Ackard, where everybody drives a foreign car and agrees with each other.
I thought that was a chord.
Right. Okay, and Paul's a good guy. He says, use your smartphone app on the way to work and listening to the live feed on the website now. Glad you have options, and that's from Paul. Let me ask you guys, because I'm not really good at this, Joe. You are much better. Now, every car, right?
Yeah.
Every car now has a thing where you can plug in your
auxiliary, an aux,
well, what
or
is
Bluetooth,
that?
Or Bluetooth.
Well,
right.
I have a Bluetooth.
Yeah, most people, if you have a car within the last, I would say 3 years,
yeah, it's Bluetooth
you have Bluetooth.
Right.
Bluetooth,
yeah.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Just go to your dealer; they'll set it all up.
But
for
I would
you.
Say, I would say anybody who has a car in the I'll last 5 to 8 years would have an aux,
yes.
an auxiliary jack,
yes.
Which usually is sometimes in your glove compartment, is sometimes in that thing.
That,
it's
but I never
really
knew
hard
what to do with
so,
it.
So you take a cord, and you do have
it's
to buy a
USB
cord.
It's a USB jack
well,
on
no.
one end. Oh, in my
okay,
car, it's a
all
USB.
Right. Anyway, it's an aux cord. You can put it at one end into your phone in the headphone jack, and then the other one into the auxiliary,
yeah.
and then you can run it right into your car
right.
radio.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But if you have a Bluetooth, that's not
just,
necessary.
It just
goes
right into,
cord,
yeah.
Right.
Except I can't make that work either. Okay. Mary says, hello, Pinnell. We are on College Hill in Clinton, New York. We can hear you on 90.3. Joe, you want to explain that one more time?
Well, we have a trans... what do we call them? Translator.
Later.
Translator. In Remsen.
Remsen.
And that is also on 90.3. So
yes,
if you hear us on 90.3 there, it is from that. The main 90.3 frequency is unfortunately not working, although we hear that crews are there and the situation is being addressed as we speak.
Isn't this like a bad commercial for National Grid?
Yeah.
Or no one can hear it.
Well, no, they can hear it.
Dear Pinnell, I just did the math and I calculated only 28% of registered voters voted for Donald Trump, while 29% voted for Hillary Clinton. Instead of racking our brains to understand why Trump, quote, won, shouldn't we be asking why both candidates lost? And that's from Don.
Well one did win.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You can't get around it.
One of them's going to get the keys. So.
As Rosemary always says, them's the rules.
It's true.
Okay.
They were set up.
Right.
And I don't like the rules, but that's what right. we all agreed to. So.
And Robert says, as it should be, there are very few limits to this free speech. One of them is you can't yell fire in a crowded theater when there is no fire. As a society, we recognize that the panic that would ensue is worse than the infringement on free speech. My question for you to debate is this. Is knowing circulating false stories such as the sex ring being run by Clinton and D.C. pizza parlor similar to a yelling fire in a crowded theater?
Did you read that some guy was arrested for shooting into that pizzeria, and he said, I'm doing it to stop the false news?
Yes.
Did you see that? Oh, my God, people are nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you cannot, basically, as a First Amendment lover, you cannot try to legislate truth or falsity of what you broadcast or publish, because sometimes it's black and white, but more often it's not. And the most important of all libel rulings from 1964 basically said, yeah, the New York Times in this ad that set off the case made some mistakes, but they were small mistakes. They did not impinge on the main impact of the story, and so therefore we will protect it. And the Supreme Court, in essence, gave the press the right to be human, to make mistakes, and it didn't nullify them or put them into danger. And that's an extremely important principle.
If I may say, but not all the press. In other words, here we sit at WAMC, and there are definite rules about people who call up, have potty mouths, what they say, you know, how you can lose your license, how you can get... See, that's what happens when you give the government the power to regulate the press, any kind
right.
of the press.
Right. I would like to see broadcast as free of regulation as print.
Yep.
And we have an administration now that doesn't like regulation, so let's get rid of the FCC.
Right, but what's interesting is, you know, because you're on broadcast,
right.
you're regulated. If you were just on
satellite
or just on the web,
it's absurd.
No regulation.
Well,
it's
a point, Libby, I've made 1,000 times. Okay, we're going to protect our children by not letting channels 1 to 13 say a cuss word. But anything over 13, now that kid's sitting there with a clicker in his hand, you're telling me he doesn't know about 30 channel 33?
That's right. Go to channel 27.
right.
It's true.
Yeah.
Go to HBO
and
Bill
Maher. If you have cable in your house.
Oh,
you're,
that's right.
That's right.
All right. Taiwan.
Oh, boiler.
Friday, the phone call happens. So this happens on Friday. The Donald Trump's protocol-breaking phone call with Taiwan's leader was... the first between leaders of the United States and Taiwan since 1979. Now, initially reported as just him taking a congratulatory call. I was watching the press reports very early on, talking about how, you know, he must not have known, and this shows the ineptitude and all of that stuff. Well, according to the Washington Post, the phone call with Taiwan's leader was an intentionally provocative move that establishes the incoming president as a break with the past, according to interviews with people involved in the planning. The historic communication was the product of months of quiet preparations and deliberations among Trump's advisors about a new strategy for engagement with Taiwan that began even before he became the Republican presidential nominee. The call also reflects the views of hardline advisors urging Trump to take a tough opening line with China, said others familiar with the months of discussion about Taiwan and China. Trump and his advisors have sought to publicly portray the call the president-elect took from the Taiwan president on Friday as a routine congratulatory call. Trump noted on Twitter that she placed the call.
Well, you know, what's the Met did the opera last year? Didn't they, Nixon in China?
Mm-hmm.
So Nixon goes to China. He shakes of all hands. You think that this is ancient history, but he shakes Mao Zedong's hand. They basically reached an agreement, although I don't think you'll ever find it anywhere, which is, okay, we're going to have a one China policy. You're the one China. And you will agree not to attack Taiwan.
By the way, the one thing I forgot in my summation is, China isn't happy.
Yeah, right.
Well, China the question, of course, Joe.
China wrote it off, though, as this is an inexperienced
man,
which is not, we now know, the case at all. He did this deliberately.
Oh, yeah. So now, that's right. So then he tweets, as Joe says, she called me, as if that makes a big difference. However, that doesn't mean that Trump wasn't aware of it, and we are now learning that this phone call was set up weeks in advance.
I was going to say the rest of his tweet was more illuminating. It was like, they didn't ask us for permission before they set up a big military installation in the South Sea.
I know.
They didn't ask us when they devalued their money. So he's very deliberately provoking mainland China.
But Rosemary, just for the sake of an argument, isn't he right about that? I mean, they are fooling with their currency. They are building those rocks out there and putting, and clearly going to put military.
And isn't he also basically right about how foolish the protocol is? We are open allies of Taiwan. So what is the big deal about this? I hate Trump, but
it's like crazy like a fox.
I am watching this.
Well, there was
an
agreement.
It's real interesting.
You see, my whole point, Rosemary, before was that there is an agreement. There was an agreement.
Right. The 72.
We're going to wink, wink, you know, and you don't attack Taiwan. And then we'll say there's a one China policy.
Right. So you know, the UN club aficionado in me, because that's what I did in high school.
Me too.
You know, it's like, this is not our foreign policy. I know. This isn't our foreign policy. This isn't what we've been doing. And so it opens up. So he wants to do this clearly to tweak the nose of the foreign policy establishment and the State Department. But he's got financial interests in this as well, as we all know.
Right.
He wants to build a hotel or something in Taiwan. So what happens? This agreement now goes by the wayside and mainland China attacks Taiwan. What happens?
Well, that's a big if.
Right.
I don't know that that's going to happen. Look, China has a relatively good relationship with the United States. And they are making out like bandits as a result of their economic. Their economy is going slower and slower and slower. And good things are happening over there, like people are making more money. The labor force is now discontented, and they're making more money. As a result, you don't go to China anymore if you want to set up a factory. You go to Bangladesh. And even in Bangladesh, things are changing. So I don't know that it's the same Maoist China that we once knew. These are businessmen. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think Libby's point, though, is a good one. I agree with both of you. But Libby's point is, we cannot really assess what he is doing or his thinking about what he's doing because it's so entangled with his own personal interests. That's a problem.
Well, the other thing is that we've heard, at least in the talking heads that I've heard over the last 48 hours since the phone call took place, is echoing what you said, Rosemary, of questioning the policy overall. However, going about it, of having meetings with the State Department, of talking about it, of getting briefings, and making sure that you have all your ducks in the row before you do something like this. That's where it was just blowing out of the water.
Well, there's, I mean, and look at the influence on him. I at first, when the story first came out, people were thinking, oh, John Bolton was in there. He just made him do it. It's like, hey, let's call Taiwan and see what happens. Of course, it was nothing like that. But he is surrounded by people who are Taiwan lovers. Rince Priebus
Rhymes,
is one.
Rhymes?
Rhymes. Oh, I'll never get that right. So sorry. I apologize. I do it to my kids, too.
It's
no,
RP,
not disrespect.
Republican.
You have a kid named Rhymes?
No. Thank God, no.
That is funny.
Who names their kid that? Is there anybody else in the world?
Stop.
But Rhymes
Priebus.
Priebus. Has been to Taiwan twice and is a big supporter of them. So, I mean, he has done two things with this call. He's put mainland China on notice that things are going to be different now, and he has shaken up the entire State Department. And I think he likes doing both of those things.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he can't seem to find a Secretary of State. He keeps expanding.
Mm-hmm. I think he already knows who it is. He's just making us wait as part of the drama.
And who is it?
I don't know. I have to wait for the announcement like everyone else.
Passing around
all news will stop when he announces it.
Somebody's passing around that it's going to be Rudy.
Yeah. I mean, the other part of this is that he's shaking everything up, and he's the kind of guy who'll shake everything up and then walk away and let everybody have to deal with cleaning up the mess.
Well, no, I'm interested in his best friend Putin. Now, his best friend Putin is looking into everybody's eyes and saying, "And you know, I have the missiles. And do you really want to mess with me?"
Mm-hmm. Putin is in heaven right now.
Yeah.
He has effectively gotten an ally in the U.S. who he probably can lead to do what he wants, including in Syria. Yeah. He has shaken up the EU, which is in really bad shape right now, especially after what happened yesterday. Putin is in the capital.
No, it's true. But what I was trying to get at, don't you see, was that Putin is a threat, obviously a real threat, and says, and you don't know what he's thinking, but you have the idea when you look into those steely eyes of his that he's willing to do anything he has to do. So you don't know that. Now, the question with Trump is when he starts up with the rocks in the middle of the ocean and, you know, and the rest, whether he's willing to do anything. And that's one of the things that was raised in the campaign. Do you want this guy with his finger on the button?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nukes are an option. Jeez.
Right.
Just
right.
Blow up the South Sea installation.
Well, all right, we're going to take a break. Yeah. We'll be back. We have more time. Don't worry.
Don't worry.
All right, we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, the 5th of December. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post make up our group this morning. And we have letters, many, many letters, and Alan has a fistful of them, and we begin there.
That's interesting considering the fact that 90.3 is not yet restored to its full power on the air, so we're getting a lot of letters. And of course, I want to remind everybody, you can listen online, you can listen on the WAMC app, you can listen at 90.9 or 105.1 or any of these other, 90.3 app by Utica, lots of other choices. G says, I consider myself a liberal. I do not support Cuomo. He should gracefully fade away and not run for president. Dear panel, as a black person, I agree that Ben Carson's position on most issues falls well outside of what most black people think. While Caesar thrice refused the throne, we know that the token appointment of this unqualified doctor is a mistake. Even Carson agreed with this initially. He did. He said so. I don't know enough.
Okay. I'm not qualified.
Barry says, although Trump can overturn the Corps' permit denial, the Corps has created an agency record supporting the need to consider alternative routes. It will be relatively easy for environmental groups to challenge any Trump action inconsistent with the Corps' decision and at very least delay the actual completion of the pipeline for many years. Also, ask yourself how much cooperation Trump will get from the Career Corps and DOJ personnel who are undoubtedly supporting the decision to deny the permit when it comes to fight those environmental groups. Well, that's an interesting letter. However, the judges who you're going to rely on to enforce the law, pretty soon you're going to find a lot of Trump judges out there. And not only that, I think the environmental the environmental concerns are going down the tubes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ryan, Paul Ryan was on 60 Minutes last night and asked, Scott Paley asked him about environmental issues. Are we going to just have to accept dirty water and dirty air? And he goes, we will have environmental rules that are commensurate with good jobs.
Well, he's a very bright guy. He's a very bright man, and we can already see that there is going to, I don't like what he says, of course, but you can already see that there'll be assuming a one-term Trump presidency, let's say
don't
Trump.
Don't do that. That's a mistake.
No, I said if you assume it. Okay, I'll change that. Then you see Pence versus Ryan coming up here. All right. Good morning, Roundtable. Do you think Trump is trying to set a USA and Russia alliance versus China? You've already
absolutely
said something.
Back to the Cold War. This was again another thing that Putin has to be happy about is that the U.S. and China are back bickering.
Okay, Peter says. Now I must have been somewhere else when this happened, but Ben Carson, who believes the pyramids were built for grain storage by Joseph,
it's true.
Yes, that's true.
So
that, yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. During the primary, yeah,
yeah.
It came out during the primary. He actually said it.
Yeah, but didn't sometime. He? But didn't he?
It was a speech from earlier, and then it yes. appeared and was all over the airways.
But Joseph did make his reputation.
Yes.
By
if you believe the story.
By feeding, yeah, but right. It's not in the pyramids. Yeah, huh. Okay. It's perfect to be.
It's crazy.
What?
It's
what?
So crazy. Oh my gosh.
What part?
The pyramids. They went through all that years and years of construction to make a grain silo.
Yeah, okay. Ben Carson, they were burying people. Ben Carson, who believes the pyramids were built for grain storage, is perfect in charge of housing under a Trump know-nothing administration. We're well through the looking glass now.
Oh, yeah.
To Rosemary.
It's Rosemary, but okay.
I'll be more Amsterdam.
That's right.
I can't say.
And you'll play the accordion. Yeah. If Rosemary, it says Rosemary, is a... If a federal ruling gave the press the right to be human, does that mean it's okay to consider a corporation a person?
No, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives any rights to companies. We've done that all through the courts. In the Constitution, the press is protected.
And point number two from Bill in New Paltz, having taught in China in the 80s, I can tell you that nothing angers and unites Chinese more than the issue of Taiwan. All Chinese I've spoken with feel that Taiwan is a province of China. I predict demonstrations in the Chinese streets.
Yeah, it is definitely it's a hot button issue, and the same could be true in Taiwan. I think you're going to see increased pressure from mainland China on Taiwan. There has been already, in addition to what's happening in Hong Kong and. If China feels that it's under pressure from the United States, yeah, that's really very reasonable. Good letter.
Sydney says, what does it mean to be the whitest black person? Why does Trump, in capital letters, have to put a black person in his cabinet? Your remarks are extremely offensive. Huh?
Okay.
Well, look.
Diversity is a good thing.
Yes,
I mean,
so do I.
You know, he needs to show. Look, he's been branded as a racist. His rhetoric throughout the campaign was incredibly racist, and so now he's putting in Ben Carson to prop up one black face in the cabinet. He's got one Asian face in the cabinet. Everybody else is mostly white men. To say, look, I'm really not a racist, and it just doesn't hold water.
And by the way,
for those of us who understand these issues,
true. And by the way, the Democrats do the same thing. They make sure that they have diversity in their cabinets for exactly the same reason.
Right, but people who are competent to take the office, that's the difference.
All right, let's see. And Norman, our friend Norman, says, from a legal standpoint, how does false news differ from false and misleading advertising? After all corporations are people now. That's pretty funny. Okay, that's enough now of that. Good point. What do you got, Joe?
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many other topics to discuss. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@wamc.org. And we will continue our conversation after this short break.
Mm-hmm.
This week on Mannix. No. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And let me reintroduce the group to you. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo. You okay?
Yeah.
All right. Libby Post is with us. If she makes just it through joking. The segment, we're good. Let me know if I have to give you the Heimlich or anything. Good morning and welcome to the program. We are talking about what is going on in the news. We want to get to a couple of other things. We can lump these together, although they all deserve time on their own. But let us, Italy's premier has said that he'll resign after a reform was rejected, which we'll talk about in a second. And then the Austria election, the Austrians rejected a far right presidential candidate. So there's some shakeups in the elections overseas.
The Trump movements continue apace, except in Austria, which was an interesting surprise. The very far, far right candidate was narrowly, but yet decisively, beaten by the more moderate person. And the analysis of that has been interesting. It's made some observers think that perhaps, realizing what was happening with the Brexit vote and with Trump, they were remembering their own horrible past with populist movements and saying, wait, yeah. Let's put some brakes on here. So that's the one bright news I saw. Italy was, I think, expected, but also another blow. The prime minister there had wanted to bring about the first reform and changes to their constitution in, 46 was the last one, so before I was born. And it would have, he said, if you don't give me this, I will leave. And the vote was not even close. 60% of people said, no, don't touch the Constitution. So it will have the further effect, as did Brexit, of messing with the EU. People seem to be rebelling against more control from Germany than they want. It's very bad news for the euro. The market response has been moderate so far, but is expected to get worse. And I don't see how it can stay stable. This is not a good vote for that. Italians now will probably be expected to talk about going back to the lira. And they have so much debt in Italy that that any kind of a move like this is destabilizing for the whole EU and the whole banking system in Italy and thus in Europe. So interesting times are upon us.
Anybody else, or you just want to leave it there?
No, but there's this whole Italian, history of government after government after government.
Like 42 governments in 46 years or something.
So this, of course, is, we like our politics the way they are. We don't want to clean them up. We do. I just remember a ride on a train that Roselle and I were on years and years ago. And Berlusconi had said that he was going to build a bridge from Sicily to mainland Italy. And when I was in this train, these people were really lovely. They were giving us cheese and bread and stuff like that. I never forget it. And when
food is important.
When I mentioned the prime minister, they all started to laugh and slap their knees, and they like this sort of.
Well, Berlusconi, who was a period of unbelievable stability in Italy for a while, is a Trump. He's totally in the Trump.
Exactly.
And he was a media mogul. He knew how to create spectacle and drama and scandal, and used all of those. And the Italians did like that. And I think many Americans are proving that they do too.
I get a lot of mail criticizing me for self-congratulatoriness, but it's something that I did say on this program, looking at Berlusconi, and then at Trump, and it was one of the reasons I thought it was possible Trump would win.
Right.
Same reasons.
Well, the one bright spot is what happened in Austria. Because I think if the right had won in Austria, there would have been a domino effect.
Well, let's remember the denazification period
that
came after the Second World War. And this became part of the textbooks and parts of what everybody had to know and to learn. I think some of it's still hanging on.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Well, the other bright spot also this week was that in France, the Hollande leaving the race opens up a way for a more moderate leader than
Le Pen.
So that would also be helpful. Of course, their election is not until April, so we have to wait and see.
Hmm.
Hopefully, there'll be a. Oh, I can't say that. That would be alarmist.
What?
That there would still be a Europe in April.
Well, hopefully there'll still
a little alarmist. A little alarmist.
Hopefully there'll
yes.
still be a European Union. In
All right, let's go to some letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
Well, Robert comes back at Libby, and that's why we read these letters. Robert mm-hmm. frequently writes, Trump has been branded a racist. He's been Trump hasn't been branded a racist. He's been outed as a racist.
Oh, okay, good.
His history of discriminating against blacks and other minorities in housing and employment throughout his career does not leave this as a debatable point. Only his avid partisans would suggest that there is still any question about his lifelong racism.
Nice.
Robert wrote that, not Libby. And I don't know why he's arguing with Libby, because I think Libby shares that.
It was just her phrasing that she said he's been branded.
Okay. The man who shot up the pizza shop did so to investigate Pizzagate. For those who don't know, Pizzagate is fake news story by the white nationalist website Reddit, allegedly conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton and John Podesta are running a child sex trafficking ring out of a D.C. pizza shop.
Jesus.
And then last night, the son of incoming national security advisor, quote, until Pizza at Pizzagate proves to be false, it remains a story. The left seems to have forgotten at Podesta mails and many coincidences tied to it. Just when you think the crazy can't get any worse, it does. Are we really in for 4 years of this, Casey in Rexford? Well, depending on what happens, maybe we're in for
8 years
forever.
We voted for it.
Forever.
8 years of Trump.
That's why I read
Pence.
The New York
wow,
Times.
Wow, we could be in for 16 years.
Okay, when I couldn't get WMC on 90.3 this morning, after losing it about 7:15 last night, my first thought was, oh no, Trump struck already. Didn't really think so, but it was my first thought. Glad to be able to get you on 1400 and online, and that's from Linda. Good morning, Roundtable, says April. When you folks go to break and I continue to watch WAMC live on the visual, right? Okay. It seems like that's when the conversation really gets going.
True,
on these
it does.
Short break times. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. Happy face, April.
Yes, our language gets colorful.
Although we're also talking about our personal
Sometimes
life.
We just talk about Milton Berle.
Yeah, that's right. True.
What was it about Milton Berle you found so fascinating?
I have been on the internet for a long time looking this stuff up.
I looked it up.
It's true.
Yeah.
How am I the only one who didn't know?
Well, we don't want to go there because the life.
Okay, but you were the one that went there.
Yes, you did. I wasn't going to bring it up.
I don't know. What about
Milton Berle? No. We'll talk about it later.
Just
talk about it
during the break, I'll tell you.
Just go on, you know, Google and put in Milton Berle, and you'll see what comes up.
Okay. I'm doing
right.
that now.
Oh, my God. all right. So let's talk about what else is in the news. Tragedy in Oakland.
Wow.
You know, and this has been started out. I don't think we even know quite what to expect yet, right?
No, we do not.
So criminal investigators are on the scene, an Oakland fire in a warehouse, and it does seem very early to say exactly what happened and how many people even have been killed.
They've got
in this.
33 bodies so far, but they've only searched one-third of this huge structure, so they fear more.
Only 35% of the burned buildings. There is a criminal probe, which is happening as well.
But no real suspicions so far. I mean, there were problems with that building that had to do with code and how many people were in there.
Well, no, but if the code guy comes around and tells you what to do and you don't do it, it seems to me there's an issue.
Well, the owner, through her daughter, said, we didn't know anybody was living there. That's not what this building is.
They say
is.
No one was living there.
Right,
they threw a gigantic party there, did not have a permit for it.
Yeah.
No smoke detectors.
And people said people were living there. So
yes, we did. That is coming out. So it's and this is a community, Oakland. In fact, the mayor was on television talking about it. That has been promoting the artistic colonies. They want to be known as a place where creative, wonderful things go on. And so this building was part of that. And maybe it should not have. Neighbors have complained about big piles of debris and trash around it, all of which would burn mightily in case of a fire.
It does. The rising death toll makes the blaze one of the deadliest in recent California history. It eclipsed the 1991 Oakland Hills fire, which killed 25 people. Cause of the fire still not known. Arson is not suspected, but Kelly, who is the I go back to the beginning of the story where the that name was actually identified, the Sergeant Ray Kelly, Alameda County Sheriff's Sergeant, said well, now we lost that quote, so I apologize.
No, but that's so interesting that, you know,
It said nothing had been ruled out. The warehouse isn't considered a crime scene. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, of course, it's something that Roseberry knows a lot about. It's, you know, as a real great journalist. And that is the second reference sometime down at the bottom of the jump. And you have no idea.
Yeah, I know.
Who,
I hate that.
Who
I always
Kelly
hate that.
Was.
Yeah. You have to remind them. Like police lieutenant or sheriff's deputy or whatever. So we didn't. Somebody was noting, a lot of people have been noting on social media that the people in charge in Oakland are all women, the mayor, the fire chief, and the police captain, and complimenting them on the wonderful job they're doing on TV. And I have to say, I'm a feminist, but it was more like maybe the job they should have been doing great at was before you got to a news conference about 33 and possibly more people
36
dead.
Now we've just 36 been told. 36
is up to, yeah.
Yes.
But it wasn't
I mean,
their
come
fault.
On. That... Why was it not their fault? A big building in the middle of Oakland and you got a giant party in the middle of the night and you're caught unawares by it? How is that not the fault of officials? This is what happens when you don't have regulations that are obeyed.
Yeah, but if people have a big party in a warehouse where people are doing art and doing their thing and the police could have come and cleared them out, but it looks like nobody called the police. I mean, I think it's a little difficult to pin this on the leaders of the city when this could have just been an accident.
You know, I don't know, Libby. I really don't know. I'm not trying to argue with you, but I know here in Albany, you know, here on Central Avenue, where we have some problems every once in a while with people who are misbehaving and all the rest of it. I do know that on a regular basis, we get visited by the Albany inspector who comes and says, there's a chip on the black paint on the black fence in front of the... And we are very fast to correct that. You know, we want to do that. So the real question is, do people, are these inspections adhere to? And that's where the mayor and the rest of the people get involved.
It could be.
So, I'm not doing any kind of criticism because we simply don't know yet, but I'm not inclined to think, this is just an unfortunate accident. You know, you have that many people in a big old
But how many people were really in there?
We don't know. They don't even know how many got away. They don't know how many are in there. It's just
I mean, the article
horrible.
This morning said maybe a handful got out, and people were talking about there were 30 or 40 people inside. So we need to find the answers.
All the old
Mickey
Rooney films with, you know.
Andy Hardy?
No. We'll have our own show. Remember, we'll have our own show.
My dad's got a barn I'll put on a
ride.
Right.
That's my favorite line.
And then shows up the police who say, you can't do that. You know, this is a fire hazard or whatever else. Right. And they have to...
Like Footloose.
They have to win over that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Footloose. Actually, exactly. This is... We're talking about local regulations, not federal. But the lesson is the same. You get complete freedom if you have no regulations, but you do pay a cost for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you know, Shartok's first rule of public administration is that, and I've said it before, is that every time there's a new regulation or a new rule, it's because somebody screwed up. American Airlines, be careful opening the overhead bin because something may fall out and hit you in the head, right? Okay, well, obviously something did happen. They got sued for $1 million. We got a new regulation.
Yeah, but then they used these regulations as great marketing and to sell more products.
I was in New York City this weekend, and one-third of the city has the scaffolding in front of each of those buildings. And there's a rule, obviously, that you have to do that on a regular basis. You have to. So the scaffolding, rules are in place now and making somebody a lot of money. Think about that for a minute. Now, where did all that start? Somebody got hit in the head with a brick.
Mm-hmm. Something falling from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm all for that. I don't get hit in the head with a brick.
Yeah.
I know a guy who did.
Yeah.
I think it changed his life.
All right.
Well, this is uplifting.
Very profound, yes.
The Prime Minister of Japan will visit Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
Announcement made. He'll become the first sitting Japanese leader to visit Pearl Harbor, he said on Monday, with a symbolic visit this month to the site of the Japanese attack 75 years ago. Of course, December 7th is Wednesday.
Okay.
That pulled a stunned United States into World War II.
This is after Obama went to Hiroshima.
Yes, and it's so interesting. I remember when he went to Hiroshima, I said, well, that's dangerous. I wonder why he's doing that. And it was right. I liked it. But he did it. It's politically dangerous. And now we see there may have been a little, you know, mm-hmm. back and forth.
Yeah, it's time for peace. It's been long enough.
He will be traveling with President Obama during a trip to Hawaii on December 26th and 27th, so right after the holidays.
Mm.
We approve.
Right. Anybody on that? Okay.
Mm.
Are we caught up in letters, Alan?
Here's a letter.
Okay, excellent. Are we caught up or are we?
No, I have one here.
Oh, okay.
Jennifer says, our country has so much advantage and promise. It is sickening that the imminent prescription to our problems is a more virulent strain of our chief disease. Give even more power and money to those who have already squeezed so much out of us in our civil society? I am afraid to think where we are headed from here. Jennifer, from West Hartford. I love West Hartford.
I can't tell what that means. Does that mean she's...
No, she's saying that the rich get richer and they've squeezed mm-hmm. everything out of us. And basically, to paraphrase her, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, I don't think that's what we voted to do, though. We voted to shake up the whole system and it's going to be a whole new world. So she must be happy with what's going on.
No, I don't think so. And mm-hmm. I think what she's really saying here is that no matter what he said during the campaign, this is where it's going.
Right. It's the richest cabinet ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, as pro-Trump people say, he's not beholden. They are not beholden to anyone.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Including the American people.
Or to themselves.
And the Constitution.
They are kind right. of. I think that the idea that Trump can make decisions, as McConnell has said they would, that have nothing to do with their own personal self-enrichment is a really scary thing. I want to see how that's resolved.
Okay, let's assume for a second, just for the sake of disbelief, that Trump comes in, he does some things which people think are good, and maybe even contrary to what he sort of was hinting at or saying during the campaign. The question is, do you let him off the hook? Or, in my case, do you abhor how he got to be president? What he had to say, what he did, the red meat, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
That seems to me to be an issue that a lot of people are forgetting about.
Mm-hmm. Good point. What's your answer? How do you resolve
it? I'm not forgiving
him. If he came in and did something really spectacular.
He may.
Came up with his son-in-law helps him and he fixes Israel and Palestine.
Or China. Or let's say
China's not really messed up, is it? I mean, what it is we're fixing there.
Well, I don't know. A relationship I'm just telling you, what if he does good things? Is he off the hook for having run that racist, misogynist, awful campaign?
I think, to me, it's the same thing that you have with any complex relationship with another human being. They may do a nice thing for you, but you still have your qualms about them because of what they have done down the line. So you may like that one thing that they did, but the caveat is, oh, by the way, you still did this, and this.
Tricky Nixon got to be president by attacking a woman named Helen Gahagan Douglas, I believe was her name, and calling her a communist, basically.
Yep.
And he ran against her for Senate, and he won. He beat her. And then he goes on, Nixon in China, Nixon on the environment. You can give him a lot of credit for some of the stuff that he did. On the other hand, look how he did it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that most Americans Have already forgiven Trump for that. They didn't take it seriously in the first place, or they wouldn't have voted for him. Well, so we can continue to say you're
say
a bigot.
Most. I would, yeah, is, right. that, is that
I
fair
mean,
to say most?
Hillary's
I mean,
ahead
a majority
by
in this election.
Million. And Hillary's ahead by 2.5 million votes. The thing is about Trump and whether
only
or not.
Limited comfort in that.
Okay, whether or not we can forgive him.
You have 4 seconds.
If he doesn't defund Planned Parenthood.
You're out of time.
He will.
We'll be. Thank you all. We appreciate you being here, and we will. We'll be back for another go around tomorrow, and more roundtable after this.